I'd like to begin with a reading, and it's by John Cummins. He was the minister at the First Universalist Church of Minneapolis from 1963 to 86, and I shouldn't do this to John, but he and I were roommates at a conference, and he snored the whole night. He apologized, but anyway, I love this reading, so a few days ago, I traveled out to western Minnesota to say a few kind words over the grave of an old woman, as indeed I had promised her I would do more than 20 years ago. Back then, she had stormed into my office, a total stranger, saying, "Young man, I got my own ideas about religion. I believe in God because there are lakes and forests and little fishes, but that's all I believe." We talked. I would drop in and visit her whenever I was in the area, and each year I would get a little note from her reminding me of my promise. She dreaded the hypocrisy of a traditional funeral. The youngest of 17 children born in Nebraska, she had rejected both family and the church of her childhood. Having no children herself and having lost her husband over 30 years ago, Molly's one joy in life was fishing. "I believe in God because there are lakes and forests and little fishes, but that's all I believe." Was Molly irreligious? I think not. Her daily life was her true temple and her true religion, and into it, she took all that she was and all that she had. She was kind, she was generous, she loved children. All nature was her congregation, and there she worshiped. End of reading. I have a problem. I do not think that we can call people irreligious or atheists because they have rejected our notion of religion. I wish we could get beyond inferring that people are irreligious, immoral, or atheists because they do not hold conventional ideas of religion. Without a doubt, every time I go to a minister's meeting that's multi-denominational, and they all ask me what a Unitarian Universalist church is like, and I just say, "Well, you know, the first thing you need to know is in my church, they're atheists, agnostics, and theists," and they can't believe it. Oh, why would an atheist come to church? And I would say back, "Well, are you implying that atheists are not human beings? That don't have the same deep yearnings that everyone else has? Really? I don't agree." I also wish we would use words with far greater precision than we do and pay attention to their subtleties. Take, for example, the following words. If we call it a church or a temple, it is one of which we highly approve. If we call it a denomination, we are being carefully neutral. If we call it a sect, we are distancing ourselves from it and being slightly skeptical. And if we refer to it as a cult, well, we imply it is queer, peculiar, and probably a fake. And my friends, you can find online where they call us Unitarian Universalists a cult. In the same way, do we abuse the word religion? "I brush my teeth religiously," we say, meaning only regularly. "We do not want a religious ceremony," says the couple in asking for a wedding. What they truly mean is they don't want a churchy ceremony. This is what Molly meant, the woman in our reading, when she asked for a few kind words over her grave. John Cummins reflects, the author of the reading in the story. What Molly did not believe in were churches and creeds as she had experienced them. She was, in fact, a deeply religious person. She had been growing her religion for some time out of her own life experience. Religion is not something you can inherit or put on like a suit of clothes. It is the values, principles, and purposes by which you live every day, drawn from life. Your real religion is what gradually becomes real to you. It is necessary, of course, to clear the ground for new growth. Do you still believe in Santa Claus as you did as a child? Of course you don't. You have rejected your faith in a literal Santa to make room for a larger faith in the rightness, joy, and goodness of giving. You have become an atheist with regard to Santa Claus. Yet you now possess a larger faith than ever before. This is what growing and growing up is all about, having your illusions removed to make room for a larger and truer faith. Lucky are those who never stop growing their religion. One who was not so lucky was Abner Neeland, a Universalist minister. Neeland was the very last person to be imprisoned for heresy in the United States. In 1845, he was sentenced to 5 years in prison by the state of Massachusetts. He had declared that the Trinity was nonsense and nowhere mentioned in the Bible. Another who was accused of atheism was the great American poet and Unitarian Walt Whitman. His poems, Leaves of Grass, embraced the whole universe with such unabashed, almost sexual ecstasy that its terms offended the Victorian era in which it was written. A contemporary reviewer said, "Whitman has brought the slop bucket into the parlor." Whitman was a skeptic of everything conventional and is considered the best poet in American letters, and was a Unitarian and a friend of Ralph Waldo Emerson. Listen to this fragment from the preface of his 1855 edition. "Love the earth and the sun and the animals. Despise riches. Give alms to everyone that asks. Stand up for the stupid and the crazy. Devote your income and labor to others. Hate tyrants. Make no arguments concerning God. Have patience and indulgence towards persons. But take off your hat to nothing, known or unknown. Go freely with powerful, uneducated persons, and with the young, and with the mothers of families. Re-examine everything you have ever been told in school, or in church, or in any book, and dismiss whatever insults your soul. And if you do this, your very flesh shall become a great poem and have the richest fluency, not only in its words, but in the silent lines of your lips and face and between the lashes of your eyes and in every motion and joint of your body." To this, he adds an overflowing adoration of what is natural. "Why, who makes much of miracles?" Whitman wrote in the Song of Myself. "A single hair on the back of my hand is as curious as any miracle. this head of mine more than churches, Bibles, and all creeds. And I say to any man or woman, stand cool and composed before a million universes. We all become atheists with regard to lesser beliefs as we outgrow and replace them with larger ones. It is a terrible mistake to categorize others who happen to be different, who happen to be at a different place in their religious development than our own. Real religion is a living, growing thing. Do not be like the man that the English novelist Thomas Hardy describes in one of his novels. And I quote, who had in his youth made up his mind as to all the larger questions of existence and admitted no thought thereafter. To equate the words irreligious, immoral, and atheist is only to admit the death of our own understanding. On the living tree of life, small branches of conviction shoot out, often in unproductive directions. They die and are trimmed away, while others, starting out as small notions, become great supporting branches. But always the tree itself is reaching towards the light. In a similar way, our own lives slowly discard the tentative notions that prove to be unsupporting, while those closer to the light become the main supporting branches that undergird our living. With regard to the discarded notions, we have become atheists. We should not feel guilty about that. Such notions have not been without purpose. They have played their part in our development. It should be noted that the living tree of conviction never does reach the sun of total understanding. However, it is always reaching towards the light. May it ever be so. We are all here to grow in wisdom and learn how to love better. You can't put it any more simply than that. As we each do this in our own ways, we slowly become a blessing to those around us and a light to the world.